a great show you guys tuned into. What a great show you downloaded. It's a Loftus Party podcast, as advertised. We got a great guest. We got Pete Hegseth is here. Can you believe it, Gimlet?
I can't believe it.
It's great. He's an incredible dude. He's a lot of fun, and I was a little. I always have a good time when I do the Fox and Friends, and you know, of course, because of the Rona, there's nothing in studio now and all that good stuff. But here's a guy, Minnesota born and raised, then on to Princeton, then on to Harvard, then in the Army, just Guantanamo, Iraq, all over the place, back in the States, working on Fox and Friends, and an overachiever. He's got his second book out. We're going to be talking about his book. And of course, we're going to have some fun. It's going to be a good time. We're going to be talking about the Pete Hegseth book, American Crusade, Our Fight to Stay Free. He's an awesome guy. I think you're going to enjoy the interview, and we're really, really glad he was on the show. So it's a good one. You picked a good one. If you're just dipping in to the Loftus Party podcast, trying to figure out what we're all about, you got a good one. You got to go. And then I'm going to tease this. Next week, it's going to be another good one. Holy smoke, our cup runneth over. You know who else?
Yes, it does.
You know who else has a cup that runneth over?
Who?
Joe Biden. That was the worst segue ever. He is, it ain't good. It ain't good.
No.
You've got Dan Bongino making some headlines saying that he's got people on the inside. Dan Bongino saying that he's got some sources in there saying it's a cognitive decline and all that madness. And then the whole vice president pick. What's going on? What's going on?
Well, Alyssa Milano normally goes insane every once in a while.
Yes, she
and
does.
So she's on the Twitter saying, my five-year-old passed that test that Donald Trump took. That's a good thing, Alyssa. The cognitive tests don't measure intelligence. They actually mention how your brain functions. And I just have one question to the Don Lemons and the Alyssa Milanas of the world. If it's so effing easy, why doesn't Biden take one?
That's a great one. That's a great company. Maybe there's a chance that Alyssa wants to be the vice presidential pick. You know, you know she would gladly accept Vice President Milano, who would quickly become President Milano when Joe Biden folds like a deck chair.
In the article, I put two videos in. One was an interview on The View in December of 2017.
Okay.
And then it was a clip of all of his stuff since then, like in the last 6 months. And it's like, you can't watch those two videos and tell me nothing's wrong.
I couldn't agree with you more. I did a video for the Loftus Party YouTube channel, and it was about Joe Biden. And I wanted to make sure I had my facts straight about ways, like how many, how many times he'd run for president, what happened both those times, mm-hmm. and how he was so easily dismissed and all that stuff. But you see him speak, you know, back in the 70s, back in the 80s, and then in the 90s. And then even he was losing a step with Obama, but now, and I hate to peddle this kind of stuff. I hate to peddle this kind of stuff because this is what the left did with Trump. You know, we're going to have to use the 25th Amendment and get him. Obviously, he's crazy. We got to get him. But like, the Joe Biden thing, it's sad. It's not good. Like, I saw the video of him being like led out of some store by the sleeve. Yep. And it's just,
When he wants to stop and talk to the media and they won't let him, they're like, thank you for being here.
Yeah. And that's, mm-hmm. like, this is the joke. It's not really a joke for the observation. Like, no one is sitting back looking, watching a Joe Biden clip. And just going, yeah, that's the guy. That's the guy to lead America. Like, no one, I'm convinced, no one in the United States of America could honestly tell me that. Could honestly tell me that they would watch Joe Biden speak and go, yeah, that's the guy. That's the leadership.
It's just, it's crazy just because now they're like all into this. Yeah, we're not going to debate Trump.
Oh, yeah. They have to. They have to. The only thing, here's, Joe Biden can't go toe-to-toe with Trump for a whole debate. He just can't. He's got one issue and one issue only. Right now, the only real chink in Donald Trump's armor is healthcare. Because he said back when he was running that he was going to do something better than Obamacare and pre-existing conditions and blah, 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 blah. And really, there's been no movement. There's been no movement. So Biden could, I think, score a lot of points going, I'm going to bring back Obamacare. I'm going to shore it up. I'm going to make it better, blah, blah, blah. But beyond that, he doesn't have a leg to stand on. I saw a commercial for him today talking about, Biden's talking about, we're going to put America first and we're going to bring back manufacturing jobs and buy an American. And you're like, well, that's obviously the flavor of the month with you because you've never felt that before.
Exactly.
In your career. We got to talk about his VP pick and some shenanigans. I think there was some shenanigans last week because here's what happened. Biden is giving a speech and he's got like a notebook or he's got a piece of paper in his hand. You know, and it's like it's got Kamala Harris's name on it, right? Because that's what you carry around when you're about to give a little press conference speech. You have a little thing like, "Here's my vice presidential pick," right? It was like, "Here's what I think happened." Somebody told Joe Biden, "Hold this piece of paper. We're gonna put Kamala Harris's name on it. Then we'll have one of the photographers take a picture, and they'll say, ooh, has he made his vice presidential pick? Is it going to be Kamala Harris?' And then it'll be kind of like an informal poll. It'll be an informal poll." And so I believe that's what they did. And boy, America gave old Kamala Harris the smackdown. That was not a warm reception.
Did you see what Politico did?
No, what did they do?
They inadvertently tweeted a link about Joe Biden's speech on August 1st announcing Kamala Harris was his VP pick, complete with a quote.
Wow.
And that happened like on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And like the internet went alight with this thing, like, ooh, they let the cat out of the bag. They let the cat out of the bag. I'm like, no, guys, that was a trial balloon. I guarantee you that was a trial balloon.
Yeah,
and I think it didn't go well, and that's why he delayed for a week.
Yeah, and I think that they have websites ready to go for whoever he picks, but I don't think it's going to be Kamala Harris. I don't think Kamala's going to be it.
Why would they think that was a good pick when she was like polled at 3%?
Yeah.
Like, during the entire primary, she pulled at 3%. And like we said, everybody's looking at Joe going, yeah, not that he's the guy. So we all know the number two is actually going to be the number one. Well, nobody ever wanted her to be the number one.
Yeah. And like, with her history of, you know, I like to sit at home and smoke weed on my time, but then I would fill the jails with people who I arrested for smoking weed. That was just horrible. Now, so who do we got left? So if it's not Kamala, I think we're looking at what, maybe a Susan Rice. Who's the other lady who was like the communist lady, the one who spoke at the
Karen Bass.
Is she the one that also did the Scientology speech too?
Yep.
All right.
So, he's out there on the Sunday shows today apologizing for all of that stuff. And I'm like, oh, my God, he's going to pick the communist.
Mm-hmm.
She has like zero name recognition, but the Oppo research on her, she trained American militants in Cuba back in the 60s and 70s.
What is up with that?
I'm telling you.
So we can't do Karen Bass. Like, we can't have like a straight up. I say this stuff.
She's worse than Bernie.
But didn't like John Brennan? Wasn't he in the Communist Party and then he went on to run the CIA?
Yes.
That's just. I have to laugh. It's just so ridiculous. And then they were floating the balloon of Susan Rice as well. And Susan Rice, here's the one that I can't get by with her. After Benghazi happened on the anniversary of September 11th, and you have the video of her on all the Sunday talk shows going, oh, it was a YouTube video. It was a YouTube video. They were upset about the YouTube video. To me, that's it. Like Susan Rice, that's a terrifying notion of having President Susan Rice. So well, who's left? Who's left?
Okay, Kamala Harris hasn't officially been taken off. And I mean, I've been saying it was Kamala like since Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Only because Obama wouldn't endorse Biden, right? Until yes. he quote unquote won the primary. And I think there was a deal there, and Kamala Harris has been in Obama world like since she ran for AG of California.
Yeah.
Like she's been, Barack Obama has been one of her biggest supporters and boosters, like for her almost her entire political career. So yeah. My thing was Obama was like, fine, I'll endorse you, but you're going to make her your VP.
Well,
that's legitimately what I thought happened. But Susan Rice would be another like logical Obama. You're going to pick Susan Rice, right? Like yeah. Where this Karen Bass thing came from, I have no idea.
I gotta think Michelle Obama's phone is ringing off the hook.
Michelle Obama's not gonna do it. She hated being in the White House and she doesn't like Joe Biden. She was off like when he put his hat in the ring, she mm-hmm. was on some kind of interview and she was just I'm doing that. I'm not gonna say my mother told me if you can't say anything nice, you don't say anything at all.
But it's like, hey, Michelle, he's only gonna be there for a couple of days.
She doesn't want to be president.
Oh my gosh. I clicked on a link to see who Biden's top choices were. And now I got this ad going about tomatoes are going to make your stomach feel better. I apologize, gentle listeners. I was trying to do research in the middle of a podcast.
Tammy Duckworth is on there.
Yeah. I don't know enough about her, Duckworth.
Man, she's as dumb as Maisie Hirono.
She sounds like a villain from a Disney Channel show. She really does.
She's just so not impressive. And Elizabeth Warren, I am told, is the only white woman still on the list. At but least they're Biden, saying she's white and not Native American. So that
didn't
that's
Biden enough. Promise though to have a person of color?
No, the only thing he promised was to have a woman.
This is other why you people, don't do it, guys.
Other people have told him you should probably pick a woman of color. But see, this is what happens when you specify first,
yes,
and then try to fill to your specifications. That never works.
Exactly. Your lead should be my vice president would be the best president if I get whacked. If I drop dead in the tub, then you're going to be super happy with President Blank because they're super smart. They can do this. They can do that. They have this background. Once you start going, listen, no matter what, I'll tell you this about my vice president. She's going to have a vagina. That's my big... That's not how you pick leaders of the world. That's not how you do it. Okay.
Well, but so I mean, who are those people in the Democrat Party? Like, who are they?
What? The good
there's
leaders?
There's like no... Yeah, there's like no... I mean, they're trying to make a thing out of Andrew Cuomo?
Yeah.
He's not particularly talented. He's a legacy.
Well, it'll be funny to watch Biden try to squirm out of it, because I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. But we gotta leave that there. We should. I wish we could have like a gambling site and try to make some money off of this. We gotta talk about what's going on in Minneapolis, in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I just put this up at the loftusparty.com. The Minneapolis PD. They just mm-hmm. advised residents, you got to give in to criminals. If somebody comes and they want to steal from you, just go along with it. Don't even try to resist. That's like the police publicly saying they've given up. Like, don't even, just hope for the best. If you get robbed, just give them everything you have and hope for the best. That is a terrifying notion and a terrifying peek into Joe Biden's America.
Well, the premise for the letter was there were 100 robberies and 20 carjackings within the third precinct where they burned the police station in July alone.
Yeah. It's
so robbery prevention tips. Do not walk alone.
Yeah.
Carry only items you need and don't carry cash. Be prepared to give up your cell phone and purse or wallet.
Just really. be ready to be the victim of crime and don't be ready for the police to help you. Just it's like if you're going to Rio or going to some crazy country where you don't speak the language and there's going to be a bunch of people. Like they always say, it's like the Olympics. That's why I said Rio. I'm not being racist. I was thinking Olympics. Like pickpockets are still around and they live for the Olympics. So if you go to the Olympics and you're going around, they're like, don't carry anything on you that you're going to want back because the pickpockets don't get it. You know, so you have your ID and your shoe, whatever. But it's just crazy to think that the police department of a major American city would come out and say that. Would come out and say, so let's tick them off, you guys. You got Portland, that's a joke. You got Seattle, that's a joke. San Fran's kind of a joke. You know, you got Chicago and Baltimore. And now in Minneapolis, where they're defunding the police and they're going to rethink the police and they're going to get rid of the police, they're just telling you, hey, you're kind of on your own. Don't get too attached to your personal belongings. That's crazy.
Seattle's going to abolish the prisons.
Well, that's one of, I got into it online the other day. I got to get better at this. It's like quicksand. You can't get into it. A buddy of mine was talking about Black Lives Matter and how like the definition of Marxism is wrong. And I'm like, don't even go there. Marxism is Marxism. We're not going to try to redefine Marxism now.
No.
It's very clearly defined. And he goes, well, I just, you know, I don't want Black Lives Matter to, you know, it's a worthwhile movement. And I'm like, what are their demands? And he's like, why don't you read more? And I'm like, you don't know. You don't know what their demands are.
I have.
Right? So you go and you do some research and you look at the demands. They're like, well, get rid of the police. Close the jails. Let all the protesters out. No bail. And it's just like, wait, we're going to get rid of the police and then not have jails? Like, who is for that? Who can go, mm-hmm, yeah, that's the platform I want to get behind. And you've got these, it's insanity where they're like what de Blasio is doing in New York, talking about the budget. Well, we're going to take $1 billion away. We're going to spend that elsewhere. We're going to cut back on these police and those police. But we will have the police guarding the mural in front of the Trump Tower. It's just it's a horrible, sick, twisted joke. And anyone who's surprised that gun sales are skyrocketing, you're a moron. You're a moron.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get in line fast enough to buy more guns. Guns.
And if you want to understand what Black Lives Matter's demands are, there's a website called breatheact.com.
Good one.
It is their proposed legislation to deal with criminal justice reform.
Yeah.
Patrice Cullors advocated for it on the DNC platform call. She also talked to The Hill about it, so she's in public saying this is what they want. And it's literally de-incarceration of just about everyone, shutting down federal prisons,
yeah.
Expunging records so you wouldn't even have notification when a felon moved into your neighborhood. I mean, come on.
It's insane. It's a terrifying
it
notion.
Insane.
It's a terrifying notion. And that's why I did the latest video on the YouTube channel. It's like there's nowhere to go. We were talking about it on the cast last week, so I wrote a song about it. But like, if Biden wins, and you know he's not all the way there, So maybe he makes it. I'm just saying, if he wins, I really hope he doesn't. I'm hoping for the same kind of the polls are wrong now like they were in 2016 and people are just not telling people how they're voting and secret Trump voters and all that. But you guys, if Biden wins and then holy smoke, with the Democrats having, you know, the House, and then hopefully they won't pick up seats in the Senate. But if you have 2 years of Democrats on full blast and Joe Biden just sitting there doing what he's told by Nancy Pelosi from AOC and the squad, you're going to get more idiotic policies like let's get rid of the police. It will boggle your mind. And from what Nancy has learned from Obamacare, when they muscled Obamacare in, and that the changes that they make will be very hard to get undone. We don't even want to go there. We don't even want to go there. All right. So we're going to take a little break. We're going to come back with our buddy Pete Hegseth. Just a great dude. Just a great dude. I'm a fan of the Pete Hegseth. So stick around for that. And then I'm going to touch base with you. And we've got a great C block planned for you. The C block is going to be quite fun and delicious.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 5,000 at checkout. That's harrys.com, code 5,000. Enjoy.
As promised, ladies and gentlemen, there's a guy by the name of Pete Hegseth on the other line. Pete, how you doing?
Michael, how are you? This feels odd. I'm not used to you asking the questions. We'll see how this goes.
Yeah, it's turnabout. It is turnabout, and that is fair play. Now, did you have a show this morning? Because we're recording on a Sunday. We're being honest with our audience.
You always are, Michael. Yes, we had a show this morning, a 4-hour tour. Sometimes it feels like it's never ending, but yes.
Okay, so I know the story that's driving me crazy. We'll get into the news a little bit later. Sure. I want to make sure that we talk about your book. I got to tell you, buddy, I did a little research. And I didn't realize this was your second book. I thought this was your first. I thought American Crusade was your big hello world, I'm an author. This is your second book.
Yeah, Michael, you and the rest of the world had no idea that I had a first book. It sold 80 copies. No, I'm just kidding. It came out 4 years ago. And if you go to Amazon right now, the cost of a hard copy for my first book is like $90 because there are none out there. It was, yeah, the first one was a true kind of expression of where I'm coming from. But I didn't have much of a platform on Fox. Fox turns out helps. So this one did a little bit better.
That's fantastic. Now, so in the arena is your background of your military, army. You've bebopped all over the planet, guy.
I'm not audacious enough to think I should write a biography when I was 35 years old. I leave that to Barack Obama. it was some of my story, but kind of where I was. And if you compare In the Arena to American Crusade, it's kind of the conversion or adaptation a lot of conservatives have had in the world of Trump. So there are not big changes, but significant changes in tone in the two books.
Yeah, I think we have kind of a similar... And I certainly don't want to put words in your mouth, but in 2016, let's just say this. I didn't start out as a Trump guy. Back in 2015, when things were starting to heat up, you know, I had buddies that were like, Trump's the man. Trump is the man. And I was a little, but boy, I could be the conductor on the Trump train, right?
I know. I think you and I have the passion of converts, you know?
Yeah.
Just oftentimes converts to anything or, you know, you weren't there first, but then you had to work your way there. And that was me too, man. And the book lays that out. The second chapter starts with, hi, my name is Pete Hegseth, and I was almost an ever-Trumper. And here's why. Because I was fervent in sort of the establishment view. Who's this Trump guy? What's he talking about? You know, and as a Iraq war vet who's a big defender of that war, you know, he's talking about what a disaster it was. I couldn't wrap my brain around it. And the book outlines kind of our moment and how necessary we needed that, you know, break glass in case of war kind of guy who just cut through all the other stuff and put America first. So, it's a confessional.
That had to have been like a tough one to get over, because I remember feeling that in the debates when, you know, when Trump went after Bush for the war in Iraq. And I'm like, I can't even imagine. Having served over there and then having to be like, hey, I didn't waste my time.
Yeah, exactly. You had to get past kind of the way Trump talks about it. But then if you take a moment to step back and look at Iraq and Syria and the rise of ISIS, you kind of go, well, regardless of how well we executed and the courage people showed and the magnitude of the sacrifice, all of which are real. If we had started in 2003 and said, what will Iraq look like in 2016, we wouldn't have wanted to look that way. So you have to be honest about whether or not our involvement actually led to a good place. And at that moment, you know, the black flag of ISIS was flying and Obama was calling it the JV team.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because the other night I couldn't sleep. I was thinking about it so much. I do a thing on stage where where Trump has come through with like everything he's promised, he came through. And it's almost comedic, like how fast he whooped ISIS's ass. Like,
yes.
Right. It's funny, but then it's scary because you're like, wow, he did do that fast. Like, what was Obama doing? So in your opinion, what's the difference between the Trump administration? Because I can remember like, every other day thinking, what's going to happen next? Boy, they blew up that concert. Boy, they killed those people there. Yep. Boy, they drove a van through that crowd. You're worried all the time. And then Trump comes in. His hand isn't even off the Bible. And he's just like, they're gone. Like,
yeah.
What was the difference?
I mean, let the pit bull off the leash. I mean, you can't overestimate how the rules of engagement had been contorted, how much risk aversion was part of the Obama calculation, how our guys on the front lines were chomping at the bit to do what's necessary. But because of, you know, honestly, political correctness had so infected the military, you had to kill ISIS in like the most compassionate possible way under Obama.
As opposed to
war is hell. And you gotta meet ruthlessness with even more ruthlessness. And turns out our special operators do that real well if you let them do it. And poof, like that, they took care of business the way we should have a long time ago.
Yeah, that is where I have always stood. Like that's how we won the Revolutionary War, in my opinion. When I'm on stage, I'm like, we fought dirty. We couldn't beat England in a fair fight, so we put on our squirrel hats, we shot the generals, and we ran.
Well, you know, and that's how our enemies fight us today. Like, they don't play by rules at all. In fact, they use the rules against us. And then we look around saying, well, that's not how you're supposed to fight war. Well, it turns out, you know, our enemy doesn't have to play by the Western rules that we've laid out. And either we adapt to fight and kill them, or we just sit around wondering why the enemy doesn't play nice. And we're not ready for that. I don't know if our political sensibilities, our culture here can handle that. And that's one of the things I write about in this book. Either you got to be there 100 years, or you got to be willing to ferociously decimate the enemy. And I don't know if we've got the gut for the second one at this point.
Man, I'm telling you, you ferociously decimate the enemy. I just found out some stuff about Germany in World War II. You probably knew this. You're a smart guy. You're a Princeton man. You're a Harvard man.
I snuck in.
I'd love to talk. Do you know about Pervitin in the Second World War?
Oh, you're edumacating me now, man. No.
Okay. So I'm watching the World War II in color last night. I apologize for the sidetrack. But like when Germany is doing the Blitzkrieg, because they went into Poland, yep, and they kind of got bogged down a little bit. They were still doing old school. So when they just went pell-mell into France, France is like, it's going to take them 2 weeks. It's going to take them 2 weeks. But somehow the German infantry was able to keep going for days and days and days. Like they did in 3.5 days what everyone thought it would take them 2 weeks. It turns out a big hunk of the German infantry was taking this drug called Pervitin, which is like the original crystal meth. And that's just terrifying to me. Like, whoa. I'm already scared of a regular Nazi. I don't need a crystal meth Nazi.
Well, you talk to guys who fought in Fallujah, friends of mine and others, and elsewhere in Afghanistan. Those enemies were often high as the apparently the Blitzkrieg was. I mean, it is oftentimes our enemies do that. We don't do that. But yeah, it puts it to the point where I remember friends saying, hey, I put 1, 2, 3, 4 bullets in these guys and they kept coming. And wow. And it's because they're out of their mind. You know, we don't fight that way. But the other thing that benefits us a lot, Michael, is that a lot of these Islamists are really bad shots. They fire off a lot of bullets, but they don't do the aiming thing. And the good ones do. And I don't mean to dismiss the enemy, but our guys are so well trained that if you just breathe, put your scope on somebody, you can, you know, one round's all you really need.
It's such a great conversation. I want to talk about all this stuff, like Black Hawk Down. I read that book, and then a buddy of mine in Hollywood was the guy who adapted it, you know, for the screen. Yep. And that battle, that whole event, that was amazing. Like our men and women over there, that was an amazing defense. And you just see, it looks like the enemy likes to just hold their rifle out and shoot blindly around corners. I don't even do that in video games. I won't even do that in Call of Duty.
Well, God bless your buddy who put that movie together, because that was an inspiration for a lot of people, like watching the heroism. I wish Hollywood would figure that out. Can you get on that, buddy? Because if, you know, patriotic movies turns out they sell well, because people like to watch the good guys win. And when they're accurately depicted, they're motivating for a lot of people.
Well, I think you touch on this in your book as well. And I'm all about the patriotic movies, and I'm all about trying to make a difference in the culture, because, yeah, and I know, I think you touch on that in the book. It's like, we have, our heroes are all screwed up. You know, kids grow up like, oh, the Care Bears, we can't win unless we share, and socialism's awesome, and we have to be a team. And like, there's no individual rugged hero anymore. And I think that's to me, that's the American spirit. You know, John Wayne, the lone cowboy against all odds, you know, being self-reliant.
100%. You're right. I mean, and you are a part of the real front lines, because we all know that politics is a lagging indicator. It's downstream from culture. Culture is far more important. So while we're writing, you know, white papers and think tanks in Washington, D.C. about, you know, Medicare policy, they're out there making movies and songs and controlling social media and curriculum in schools. I mean, my God, open up a textbook of one of your kids. And then you wonder why we've gotten to a place where Bernie Sanders is hip. And Joe Biden is running to the left in a primary, because not a primary, in a general, because I mean, Ronald Reagan said it, and you know this, and you share this through your comedy and through what you do. Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. And that sounds like a talking point, but it isn't. And when you look at education and culture, you start to realize we're raising kids who believe America is the bad guy in history and who don't have that view of rugged individualism and view that rights are endowed by God. And then we wonder, you know, why they're seduced by socialism. Why wouldn't you? And they don't know history either. So they wouldn't know that the Nazis were socialists and what the Soviet, all of those things stand for. And then we're just rudderless.
Yeah, like literally, you tell people about Stalin starving millions of his own citizens to death. You tell them about what China did with their grand revolution, and they have like zero clue. Like you might as well be talking about a science fiction book they haven't read, because you're gonna see them glaze over. What?
Yeah. What? Yeah. Don't wait. Well, no. Don't take away my TikTok. No, not my TikTok.
What is the deal with TikTok? Everybody keeps asking me, and all I can say is like there's some kind of embedded code where they're mining data and they can do something nefarious. I'm sure you know more about this than I.
You know, I mean, the American part of TikTok is attempting to say, don't worry, we'll never share your data. Of course, all these social media apps have massive mountains of data about us. It's why when you go on Instagram, you know, ads pop up about things you were talking about yesterday. And you're like, how does it know? It knows. The nefarious part is that because TikTok is owned by a Chinese company, which is controlled by the state, there's a law in China. I mean, Xi Jinping has pushed a massive expansion of state powers. There's a law that if the Chinese government demands it, you must turn over user data of all of your people. So they might be able to say right now, don't worry, we're not giving it to the communist Chinese. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. But if they wanted to, they could. And that's 100 million, 120 million Americans. And the surveillance capabilities are massive. So the fact that the DOD is saying to employees, you can't use it, makes, you know, a ton of sense. A lot of these companies try to do it themselves, but their woke staffers are like, no, I want to make dance videos. I hope it's a moment to, you know, for parents to turn to kids and say, hey, here's why. The problem is a lot of parents are scared of their kids, and they're not going to explain that. So it is not a petty, but a small glimpse into the double standard that China's gotten away forever. Do you know how many American apps are allowed in China? Zero. There's none. You can't. Wow. It's always let us into your economy to take and replicate and steal. But if you come to us, we steal everything from you. You play by our rules. We're in control. Eventually, that cuts against us, and we're already seeing that.
Yeah, and I don't know if there was anything more annoying, like being in the New York area and hearing about if you step outside, it's death. It's instant death. And the hospitals are overwhelmed and nurses are working around the clock. You hear about all this horribleness, and then you go to TikTok and you see some chick on a gurney dancing down the hall with her girlfriends. You're like, get to work, lady.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. And it's true. It's true.
It is. So you have a 30-second elevator pitch on like American Crusade. What's like when you sit down to write a book like this, what is it that you really want to do? You want to say, hey, things are really bad, but we can fix it, and here's how we fix it? Or I don't, it seems like you're an optimistic guy. It's not a book where you're like, hey, it's game over. Let's all find another place to live.
I am optimistic, but Michael, two of the three scenarios in the book end up bad for us. Like that's how bad it is where we are in our culture. I'll put it this way, a military analogy. There's something called the near ambush. A near ambush is the most dangerous thing you can be in. We train on it in the military. If you're in a near ambush, you're stuck in the kill zone. The enemy's right on top of you. They have the high ground. You're screwed. You're dead. The only thing you can do is once you realize you're in a near ambush is pop a grenade, throw it, and then charge toward the enemy, right? Otherwise, you stay in that kill zone and you can't win. And wow. what I think Donald Trump represents is finally Republicans and patriots saying, you know what, we can't just kind of hide behind our vehicles and try to shoot back at the left as they crush us. We have to throw the grenades, charge the hill. And what happens when you charge is the only reason that's your only chance is if you're able to make it through, or a few people are, the enemy has to expose itself from their concealed position, from the tall grass. Now you can see them and you know who they are. And I think Trump has been the guy lobbing those grenades saying it's time to charge. And when he does that, from media to social media to the Democrats, they show us who they really are. They're socialists. The media is fake. It's all stacked. And so he's created an opening for patriots to expose that and try to fight back. And I think 2020, it will be massively telling. Whether we win or lose, it shows whether we can still win in the political quarter. But we have to use this moment to drive into the culture and drive into educational institutions. Otherwise, I mean, the left, it's depressing when you read the book and you realize how entrenched leftist ideology is across American culture. So I'm not pessimistic, but I'm realistic in the book that we better seize on what Trump has done, or, you know, republics only live on average between 225 and 275 years. Like, we're right in the sweet spot of that, and we're killing ourselves.
Wow. You know, that is the best metaphor, the near ambush. That's the best. Now I have to get the book. That's the best metaphor for where we are. And that's how I feel about it. I feel like there's like a little game that the Republicans and the Democrats have played for a very, very, very long time. And a lot of people got rich, where you put up like a fake fight. You kind of half fight. It's all for show. But then the Republicans always give a little ground. We always give a little ground. So, okay, so now you're a foot more to the left. Now you're another foot more to the left. And we've come all the way left that we can. The next step is over the cliff. The next step is straight up socialism. So we're there. It's the near ambush.
Yeah.
It's a much and better, people, I'm going to steal that.
You should steal it. Absolutely. 100%. But what makes people point out, and they're not wrong. Hey, people, don't be so obsessed about this moment. You know, I try to grapple with the idea of momentism, that like we get stuck in our moment and think it's the worst. And people point out, hey, we fought a revolution, we fought a civil war, civil rights movement. I concede all of that. But what's different about now is the civil war was, we were fighting to fulfill the promises of our founding, right, of equality, the civil rights movement, same thing. Martin Luther King is marching with a Bible in his hand, quoting the Declaration, saying, here's why, you know, we can do better as Americans. The left today is saying America is the enemy. Like, our founders were nothing but racists. America was founded on nothing but slavery. Capitalism is evil. And when you're fighting a political opponent who isn't just different in ideology, but believes the country you're in is bad, that's a whole different moment. Like, we weren't there on a large scale before. We are because of education and indoctrination today. So I think, you know, sometimes you can be too obsessed with your moment. I don't know that that's true right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very good point. That's a very good point. Everybody, you wonderful listeners, you got to go pick up Pete's book. You got to get American Crusade, Our Fight to Stay Free. Also, start a GoFundMe, everybody listening. Scrape all your money together, and we're going to all bid on an original copy of In the Arena from 2016. I got one last question for you. When you get in the car, or when you get where you've got to get to work, but you want to get in the right mindset, what do you jam out to? What song do you just hit play on? You're like, this is going to get me right.
Oh my goodness. It rotates, I'll be honest. Okay. I'm usually allow myself to be a slave to the shuffle function on iTunes of the songs that I've downloaded, which is terrible, because it runs you into like Christmas songs and other things, you know. So
and then you're hitting skip, skip, skip.
Then you're hitting skip, skip, skip. A lot of people do that. I mean, recently it's been Kanye's God is King album, which I think is fantastic.
My buddy played guitar on that.
Really?
Yeah, one of my cohorts on the Freedom to Laugh comedy tour, my buddy Brian Hayner, played on a couple of those tracks. We couldn't tell anybody. And like, I would be in the studio with you guys and talking about the Freedom to Laugh tour, and I know that my buddy is in the studio as we speak, you know, blah, blah, blah. He's putting down tracks. He's working for Kanye West. And I'm like, this is how cool we are. This is how cool we are. I'm funny. My buddy plays guitar on Kanye's album. I've been jamming up. I'm rediscovering the Eagles of death metal. Dude, you got to get some of that in the rotation. You got to get
Eagles of death metal. Wasn't top of my list.
They were the band that was playing in Paris when they were like when ISIS came in and the dude started shooting the joint up. But check out some Eagles of death metal. You will be surprised.
Okay. All right. You got it. You got my word. And I will say, Michael, I've confessed this to you privately, but now I'll confess it publicly. I've always wanted to try stand-up comedy. I don't think I would be good at it. I don't know that I have it, but I don't think I can go to the grave until I try you know, what all you comedians describe when you walk up to the microphone and you realize people are there and your only job is to make them laugh, which I've never been good at. So but I've always liked to think maybe I've got the opportunity. And then, you know, Jen, my wife, or others will be like, whoa, bad idea. This is not going to go well for you.
Dude, it's going to happen. This is going to happen. You got a little reprieve with the Rona. You got a little reprieve. There's not a lot of live dates, but I'm going to make something happen. You crushed it when you hosted the Fox Nation Awards thing. That's half the battle. Coming out there and not peeing your pants.
That is half the battle, but making people laugh when they're not expecting to laugh, that's much easier than making people laugh when they're like, what's this guy got? You know, it's a whole nother dynamic.
It's the worst. When I'm about to go on stage and the guy introducing me goes, this is the funniest person you'll ever see. Hilarious. Then you can just feel the whole audience butts pucker and they get all mad and they're like, okay, prove it. Yeah, it's much better to be funny. I won't set you up too bad. I'll give you a great introduction. You'll tell some heartwarming stories about growing up in Minnesota and sledding and cross-country skiing or whatever the hell you did up there.
I don't even know what I did. It seems like a lifetime ago. When we do it, when the Rona is over and in person is real again, I can't do it, you know, socially distanced. It's got to be the real thing. I'm going to
just know this. I will make fun of whatever you're wearing. Whatever you're wearing is going to be, because you like to bust my chops about that when I'm on the show. You're like, thanks for dressing up, all this stuff. So listen, I will get even.
Okay. I mean, you're right. It's like, it's always like, hey, Michael, is that your nicest jean jacket? Or is this dress up day?
All right. Well, hey, thanks for being on the show. Hey, have a great rest of your day. Thanks so much. Everybody, you got to pick up his book, American Crusade, Our Fight to Stay Free. Pete, thanks a ton. Enjoy the rest of your day, brother.
Thanks, brother. Likewise.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-516-7602 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-516-7602 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-516-7602. That's 1-800-516-7602. Again, 1-800-516-7602.
Let's give it up for Pete Hegseth. I thought it was very cool that he did the show. A great guy. I cannot wait to get him on stage. There's a guy that wants to do comedy. In his heart, he wants to do it. We got to make it happen. But first, we got to make sure the Rona is all gone. We got to get the live shows back. We got to get a packed house. Then I introduce Pete Hegseth. Yes, we will roll cameras. We will have it in three dimensions because I want every moment of his stand-up comedy debut to be filmed and to be a part of history. All right. There was a couple of wonderful things. There's many wonderful things happen all the time. Hopefully your business is open. Hopefully your friend's business is open. Hopefully you're not taking the lockdown seriously. I don't want to start with this. We'll start with this. They're using the lockdown. I think they want to keep you miserable, and they really want to do the vote by mail thing. Trump did something that was just so just blatant and see-through and easily figured out. I couldn't believe everybody fell for it. But he did that tweet about vote by mail and the fraud, and the press just, like, it's so wonderfully easy for him to just lead the press around by the nose. And it was great. So now everybody has to. So, okay, so the president's talking about he's going to withhold the election because vote by mail. So they instantly freak out. Good for them. They went in the right direction. And then they had to talk about vote by mail and voter fraud and things that have happened and how it doesn't work and how only 5 states are really ready for this and the other 45 are, they'd be completely overwhelmed and the postal service and blah, blah, blah. Vote by mail is a bad idea. Vote by mail is a horrible idea. So good for Trump. Good for Trump for just unleashing that tweet and moving the herd of cattle where he wanted them to go. Here's what happened today, Gypsy. Mm. In Australia, I don't know how they have Australia divvied up. I know we have fans in Australia. Good day, Australia. Thanks for tuning in. I get a lot. It's weird. I get a lot of messages on the Facebook and on the YouTube from people who enjoy our work down in Australia, down under. They shut down Victoria, I believe, because they had 7 people die. 7 people died of the Rona. 6 of them in a nursing home. So they're going full tilt boogie lockdown. And that to me, why, yes, any loss of life is sad and it's tragic and all that stuff. But like 7 people? 7? That's a, really? You're going to shut down a big hunk of Australia for 7 people? I was shocked by that. I was shocked by that. Like, maybe you're overreacting. I'll remind maybe. You guys of this. Yeah, maybe. Every year, and this is in the U.S. This is just the U.S. Heart disease, 650,000. Boom. Lights out from heart disease. Cancer, 600,000. Bango. Call it a day. Stroke, 150,000. Medical error coming in at 251,000 people. I know every day they like to do the drumbeat of the deaths in America, blah, 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 blah. But when you're losing 250,000 people a year to mistakes, I think you gotta pick and choose what freaks you out more. I'm totally freaked out by the medical error. That's the number 3 leading cause of death in America. Rona is about halfway there. And Rona, oh, and the hydroxychloroquine, that whole battle. Don't get me on my, that will not be funny, me talking about hydroxychloroquine. That's just, it's criminal what they're doing with that medication. It's criminal, criminal, criminal.
Beyond criminal.
Yeah. I know that Ohio
said...
what
they're doing to those doctors, I talked to one of them today.
Really? Who'd you talk to? With the black lady on the steps and the whole thing?
No. I didn't talk to her. I talked to one of the other doctors that didn't speak in front of the... He didn't speak in front of the Supreme Court. He was at the round table later. But he's here local to me in Savannah. His name's Dr. Scott Barber.
That's great. That's awesome. So, but he was.
I'm going to talk
them.
To him
was...
a little bit more, and then I'll write it up.
Okay, I linked an article, and I can't. The guy wrote a blog, and he's from Brazil, and I forget where it was posted. I could go back and look on the website. I had the link of it on the website. It's since been taken down. It has since been taken down. This guy did some exhaustive research. And he had links to everything. And he had proof. Did you read the same one?
No, it was on Medium, right?
It might have been Medium.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's the greatest. It's the greatest hoax.
Somebody tweeted it out, and I went to read it, and I got a 404. It had been taken down for violating the terms of service.
I read it before they took it down.
Tell me about it.
Okay, so that doctor in France, his last name starts with a D. He is one of the top scientists and researchers, and his background and his he's been published in so many papers. He is the top notch. He is at the top of his game. He's not just some whack job. He's not some whack job who got his doctorate through the mail, through the Rainbow University of Hugs and Kisses. This guy's the real deal, and he has the stats to back it up, and he has the protocol. He has the protocol. Yep. At the first sign of this, you do that. You do this many milligrams of this, then you add that. But he's got the recipe, and so he's got the charts for that. He's got the graphs for that. Then he's got, here's the people who kind of fought back, and here's why their science was no good, and this is why people had to retract that, and here's what happened to The Lancet, and here's what happened here. And he just it took me an hour to read it. It took me an hour. It was so much to digest. However, because I love you guys, I'll dissolve it down to this. If you follow this French doctor's protocol, your odds of living go up astronomically. It is such a successful treatment. And for people to pretend it isn't. And then, of course, the drug's been around since 1950. You know, it's all that business. And it's all about the public relations of it all and who's attacking whom and how do you defend yourself from these attacks and will science win? The bottom line is, when you follow this French doctor's protocol, you don't die. And that's it. You know, you can talk, oh, we didn't do a double-blind study, and we didn't make sure that a baboon that's left-handed took it, and you didn't give it to an amputee from Sweden. It's no. You follow this protocol, and then when they're doing these, and you and I talked about it on this show, when they were first coming out against hydroxychloroquine, and like the government, maybe it was the Army or the Navy, they did their own little study, and they were giving huge amounts of hydroxychloroquine to toxic people who were already on death's door, and they're like, toxic. Ooh, look, their hearts were beating like little hummingbirds, and then they died. And it's like, yeah, it was toxic levels that they were giving to him, and you already had one foot in the grave. So it's not honest. It's not science. And that's why, you know, no one hopefully pays attention to that one anymore. It's just amazing. And hopefully there will be some kind of class action lawsuit against anybody who's not, like in Ohio, they're like,
against the FDA.
Yes. There has to be.
That group of doctors came out, and you had the woman from West Africa who definitely has some different ideas about stuff, but she's a board certified physician. It has more to do with her culture she grew up in. So now we get to be mean to immigrants, but whatever. There was actually more than a month before that, a epidemiologist named Dr. Harvey Risch looked at all of the studies for outpatient use. And Dr. Harvey Risch is one of the top epidemiologists in this country. He has over 300 peer-reviewed studies, and he's been cited almost 7,000 times, and he's like 40.
This is the Yale guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody is mentioning his name, like, because they can't contradict him. Because that guy wants to debate Fauci, and Fauci won't have it.
Yeah. If you want to read what the Liberty Gypsy's talking about there, you guys, go to theloftusparty.com. I have a link to it there. It's up. It's this Yale epidemiologist, and he's no slouch either. And that's what really – and it's like I was talking to Hegseth about it, about like Trump came in and said he was going to get rid of ISIS. Boom, he did it. How did he do that? And Hegseth is like, you know, hey, he just unleashed. He let us fight to win. And it's really – I don't go to a happy place when I think about hydroxychloroquine and the lives it could save. And if you did it, like, this is bigger than money. Like, the only thing that makes sense, The only thing that makes sense a little bit to me is like somebody has remdesivir. Oh, I got stock in the company that makes remdesivir, so I want to push remdesivir. It's horrifying to think, and maybe I'm still naive. I hope I am in a little bit of a way. But if like, wow, you would sit back and watch 100,000 people die because you want to make some money on remdesivir? Like, I can't think of any other reason why they would do it. And if hydroxychloroquine doesn't work, then do a fair and honest assessment of it. We've been at this thing for months. It's horrifying.
Well, I mean, what bothers me the most is that there are states that are literally giving power to pharmacists to not fill a doctor's prescription.
Yeah.
That is like unprecedented.
I remember that's insane. A while back seeing a video, there was a doctor from, I think she was in Dallas, and she was giving a press conference and talking about she was writing prescriptions for hydroxychloroquine for people who had tested positive for coronavirus. She was having insane success with it. Insane. Mm-hmm. Not only were people living, but like even when they had the virus, it wasn't that bad. Like you get mm-hmm. treated easier. It's easier to get off of. Yada, yada, yada. Then she started to get pushback from the pharmacists. Like you're talking mm-hmm. about. They're like, we're not going to fill this. We're not going to fill this. That's criminal. That's criminal. Well, lawyers have to be salivating.
The doctor up in New York City, who I can't remember the name of the small little town up there, the Jewish community that Cuomo shut down first because they had a real outbreak. Yeah. Dr. Zev, he had over 2,200 patients. Two died. And they were all like a little bit older, had pre-existing conditions, and he never gave it until they complained of shortness of breath.
Yeah.
So it was a consistent, like it was a consistent group, like you would study. But I mean, the one thing that the doctor who was from West Africa and I totally agree on is that double-blind, placebo-based studies in the midst of a pandemic are absolutely unethical.
Yeah.
So if you have a safe and effective drug that we think might work, that's already FDA approved, the guys at University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, after the H1N1 pandemic, actually developed a trial that's based on machine learning so that everybody can get the medication. Which is way more ethical.
Yes, it's mind-boggling, and it just like the media just seems to take such delight in it's bad today. It's horrible. And I'll remind everybody who's listening, encourage everyone you have. I know people in California, we have listeners in California. Thank you. And people are miserable and, oh no, here we go again. I wouldn't do it. I can't encourage people enough. Just ignore it. Ignore it. I know there's that kid that owns that gym in Jersey and they're doing everything to him. And hopefully he doesn't end up being a martyr for the cause. Hopefully he can open up his gym but there's going to be lawsuits and there's going to be hopefully GoFundMes and all that stuff. But I don't want to use the word insane, but it is. It's like they're shutting. There's all these other agendas and ulterior motives, and it's a difficult time. But like your business, your livelihood, you being able to feed your family is more important than what these governors are saying. It's horrible.
And you know whose governor they don't talk about anymore?
Who? Whitmer?
Mine.
Oh, yeah. Georgia.
Remember when Brian Kemp got savaged for reopening? And then they had to shut up because we had very low case rates for 6 weeks. Then the riots happened and we shot up. You know what's happening now?
What?
Our 7-day rolling average is starting to look just like New York's, because if the CDC is correct and the actual infection rate is 10 times confirmed cases, we're hitting about 20% of the population. And if you listen to some doctors in infectious disease, they're like, guys, coronaviruses, once we hit about 20%, they like go into a cat. Like they find a new host. This always happens.
Yes.
Like this is not a novel virus. We know what coronaviruses do.
Check this out. And I'm so glad you brought up they're not bringing up Kemp anymore and they're not bringing up Georgia anymore. For a couple weeks, they're like, ooh, Sweden messed up. Sweden messed up. No, they didn't, you guys. No, they didn't. Sweden's doing great now. The rest of Europe that was on the lockdown, they're seeing spikes now in the hot spots like we are. And Sweden isn't. So this whole lockdown BS is just horrible. And these people who are worried about baseball, oh, what's going to happen to the baseball? Will they have to cancel the season? Who gives them? Who cares? I could not care less about baseball.
You're going to cancel the season because your guys are going to get the sniffles. I mean, you are talking about some of the most athletic, best in shape people in the world. If they don't have diabetes, most of them aren't. And total props to Bill Maher. Okay.
Yeah.
He actually came out and he said the body positivity thing needs to stop, because what none of these people are telling you is you get diabetes because you're overweight. You get cardiac disease because you're overweight. And if your BMI is above 35, you are 8 times more likely to die of COVID. And no health expert will get on TV and say that, and they need to.
That's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And it's a great button to the show, because as a, we like small government and we don't look to Big Brother for the solutions, I would point to the reason that we're such a big society now is the way the government put together the food pyramid when everybody flipped out and it was bad science. It was junk science. You can pinpoint the date. It was right after Dwight Eisenhower had his heart attack. And then it's like, oh, America, we're doing it all wrong. We were fine. We were skinny. We were wonderful. And yes, you can talk about agriculture, blah, 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 blah. But everybody listened to this douche who, oh, we need to follow this food pyramid. And once we started doing the food pyramid, which was the official brochure, this is the way you have to do it. If you're going to have public schools and lunches and public schools and you're going to do this, you got to do the food pyramid. And they turned us into big fat blobs. And there's a lot of health risks when you're a big fat blob. So
COVID being one of them.
It is now. And
I'm serious.
I'm right there with you. That's why I was delighted. That was a laugh of delight that it was. You're absolutely right. You guys, it was a fantastic show. I want to leave you with some more good news, because as you know, we've been slogging it out here for the longest time. We're so happy that we had Pete Hegseth join us. Things are going well. It's tough. I know that Google and all those guys just testified. We know the fingers on the scale. You know the fingers on the scale when it comes to social media. But we're not going anywhere. And in fact, we're growing. I look at I talk about this all the time. The algorithm. And I apologize if it gets boring. But because you guys click like, and because you leave comments, and because you're telling your friends about the show and the YouTube channel and the loftistparty.com, everything's kind of growing. We're growing. And that's exciting. That's exciting. And it's what the other side doesn't want. They don't want a group of cool people who get together and can laugh about stuff, and we can take action about stuff, and we can help small businesses, and we can encourage our fellow man and be wonderful, healthy people. They don't want that. So let's continue to piss in their cereal by growing. I will see you guys. I won't see you, but you'll hear me, and you will hear the Gypsy next week with another fantastic special guest. I think you're going to be delighted.